If Frey knew what his fate would be, I said, why did he give up his blade in the first place? Blitz grunted.
Love? Why else?
Love? Ugh, Sam said. I hate that story. Where are you taking us for lunch, Magnus? Part of me wanted to hear the story. Part of me remembered my conversation with Loki.
Will you search for your heart's desire, knowing it may doom you as it doomed your father?
A lot of Norse stories seem to have the same message. Knowing things wasn't always worth the price. Unfortunately for me, I'd always been the curious type. It's, just up ahead, I said. Come on. The food court at the transportation building wasn't Valhalla, but if you were homeless in Boston, it was pretty close. The indoor atrium was warm, open to the public, and never crowded. It was only half-heartedly patrolled by private security. As long as you had a drink cup or a plate of half-eaten food, you could sit at the tables for a long time before anybody made you move. On the way in, Blitzen and Hearthstone started toward the garbage cans to check for lunch leavings, but I stopped them. Guys, no, I said. We're eating actual meals today. My treat. Hearth raised an eyebrow. He signed, You have money?
He's got that friend here, Blitzen recalled. The falafel guy.
Sam froze in her tracks. What? She looked around as if just realizing where we were. It's cool, I promised. I know a guy at Fodlin's Falafel. You'll thank me for it. Stuff is amazing. No, I... Oh, gods. She hastily put her scarf over her hair. Maybe I'll wait outside. I can't...
Nonsense!
Blitz hooked his arm through hers.
They might serve more food if we've got a pretty woman with us.
Sam clearly wanted to bolt, but she allowed Hearth and Blitz to steer her into the food court. I guess I should have paid more attention to how uncomfortable she was acting, but once you put me within 100 feet of Fodlin's Falafel, I get tunnel vision. Over the past 2 years, I'd struck up a friendship with the manager, Abdel. I think he saw me as his community service project. The shop always had surplus food, slightly out-of-date pita bread, day-old shawarma, kibba that had been sitting under the heat lamps a little too long. Abdel couldn't legally sell the stuff, but it still tasted perfectly fine. Instead of throwing it out, Abdel gave it to me. Whenever I came around, I could count on a falafel flatbread sandwich or something just as tasty. In return, I made sure the other homeless folks in the atrium stayed polite and cleaned up after themselves so Abdel's paying customers weren't scared away. In Boston, you couldn't walk a block without stumbling into some icon of liberty, the Freedom Trail, the Old North Church, the Bunker Hill Monument, whatever. But to me, liberty tasted like Fodlin's Falafel. That stuff had kept me alive and independent ever since my mom died. I didn't want to overwhelm Abdel with too many people, so I sent Blitz and Hearth to grab a table while I escorted Sam to get the food. The whole way, she dragged her feet, turning aside, fiddling with her headscarf as if she wanted to disappear inside it. What's the matter with you? I asked. Maybe he's not there, she muttered. Maybe you can say I'm your tutor. I didn't know what she was talking about. I bellied up to the counter while Sam hung back, doing her best to hide behind a potted ficus tree. Is Abdel here? I asked the guy at the register. He started to say something, but then Abdel's son Amir came out from the back, grinning and wiping his hands on his apron.
Jimmy, how's it going?
I relaxed. If Abdel wasn't around, Amir was the next best thing. He was 18 or 19, trim and good-looking, with slick, dark hair, an Arabic tattoo on his biceps, and a smile so brilliant it could have sold truckloads of teeth whitener. Like everybody at Fodlin's Falafel, he knew me as Jimmy.
Yeah, I'm good, I said.
How's your pop?
He's at the Somerville location today. Can I get you some food?
Man, you're the best.
Amir laughed.
No biggie.
He glanced over my shoulder and did a double take.
And there's Samira. What are you doing here?
She shuffled forward.
Hi, Amir. I am tutoring Matt. Jimmy. I am tutoring Jimmy.
Oh, yeah?
Amir leaned on the counter, which made his arm muscles flex. The dude worked full-time at his dad's various shops, yet he somehow managed to avoid getting even a speck of grease on his white t-shirt.
Don't you have school?
Yes, but I get credit for tutoring off-campus. Jimmy and his classmates.
She pointed toward Blitz and Hearth, who were having a rapid-fire argument in sign language, tracing circles in the air.
Geometry, Samira said. They're hopeless with geometry.
Hopeless, I agreed. But food helps us study.
Amir's eyes crinkled.
I've got you covered. Glad to see you're okay, Jimmy. That bridge accident the other day. The paper had this picture of a kid who died. Looked a lot like you. Different name, but we were worried.
I'd been so focused on falafel that I'd forgotten to think about them making that connection.
Ah, yeah, I saw that. I'm good, just studying geometry, with my tutor.
Okay.
Amir smiled at Sam. The awkwardness was so thick you could have cut it with a broadsword.
Well, Samira, say hi to Jid and Bibi for me. You guys go ahead and sit. I'll bring out some food in a sec.
Sam muttered something that might have been, thanks a lot, or kill me now. Then we joined Blitz and Hearth at the table.
What was that about? I asked her. How do you know Amir?
She pulled her scarf a little lower over her forehead.
Don't sit too close to me. Try to look like we're talking about geometry.
Triangles, I said. Quadrilaterals.
Also, why are you embarrassed? Amir is awesome. If you know the Fodlin family, you're like a rock star to me. He's my cousin, she blurted. Second cousin, twice removed. Or something.
I looked at Hearth. He was scowling at the floor. Blitz had taken off his ski mask and glasses, I guess because the interior light didn't bother him as much, and was now sullenly spinning a plastic fork on the table. Apparently I'd missed a good argument between him and Hearth.
Okay, I said, but why so nervous?
Can you drop it? She said. I raised my hands.
Fine. Let's all start over.
Hi, everybody. I'm Magnus, and I'm an Inherii. If we're not going to study geometry, could we talk about how we're going to find the Sword of Summer?
Nobody answered. A pigeon waddled past, pecking at crumbs. I glanced back at the falafel shop. For some reason, Amir had rolled down the steel curtain. I'd never seen him close the shop during lunch hour. I wondered if Sam had somehow offended him, and he'd cut off my falafel allowance. If so, I was going to go berserker. What happened to our food? I wondered. At my feet, a small voice croaked,
I can help with both those questions.
I looked down. My week had been so whack I didn't even flinch when I realized who had spoken.
Guys, I said, this pigeon wants to help.
The pigeon fluttered onto our table. Hearth nearly fell out of his chair. Blitz snatched up a fork.
Service here can be a little slow, said the pigeon. But I can speed up your order. I can also tell you where to find the sword.
Sam reached for her axe.
That's not a pigeon.
The bird regarded her with a beady orange eye.
Maybe not. But if you kill me, you'll never get your lunch. You'll also never find the sword or see your intended again.
Samira's eyes looked like they were going to shoot across the atrium. "What is he talking about?" I said. "Intended what?" The bird cooed.
"If you ever want Fadlan's falafel to open again..."
"Okay, that's a declaration of war." I considered grabbing for the bird, but even with my inherited reflexes, I doubted I could catch it. "What did you do? What's happened to Amir?"
"Nothing yet," said the pigeon. "I'll bring you your lunch. All I want is first pick of the food."
"Uh-huh," I said. "And assuming I believe you, what would you want in exchange for information about the sword?"
"A favor. It's negotiable. Now, does that falafel shop stay closed forever, or do we have a deal?"
Blitzen shook his head.
"Don't do it, Magnus."
Harth signed, "Pigeons cannot be trusted." Sam met my eyes. Her expression was pleading, almost frantic. Either she liked falafel even more than I did, or she was worried about something else. "Fine," I said. "Bring us our lunch." Immediately, the shop's steel curtain rolled up. The cashier stood like a statue, the phone to his ear. Then he unfroze, glanced over his shoulder, and shouted an order to the cook as if nothing had happened. The pigeon took off and sped toward the shop, disappearing behind the counter. The cashier didn't seem to notice. A moment later, a much larger bird shot out of the kitchen, a bald eagle with a tray in his claws. He landed in the middle of our table.
"You're an eagle now?" I asked.
"Yeah," he said in the same croaky voice. "I like to mix it up. Here's your food."
It was everything I could have asked for. Steaming squares of spiced ground beef kibbeh, a stack of lamb kebabs with mint yogurt dip, 4 fresh slabs of pita bread filled with deep-fried nuggets of chickpea goodness, drizzled in tahini sauce and garnished with pickle wedges. "Oh, Helheim, yes." I reached for the tray, but the eagle pecked at my hand.
"Now, now," he chided. "I get first pick."
Ever seen an eagle eat falafel? That horrifying image now haunts my nightmares. Faster than I could blink, the eagle struck, vacuuming up everything but a single wedge of pickle. "Hey!" I yelled. Sam rose, hefting her axe. "He's a giant! He's got to be!"
"We had a deal,"
the eagle belched.
"Now, about the sword."
I let loose a guttural roar, the cry of a man who has been deprived of his rightful kibbeh. I drew my sword and smacked the eagle with the flat of the blade. It wasn't the most rational move, but I was hungry. I was angry. I hated being taken advantage of, and I didn't particularly like bald eagles. The blade hit the bird's back and stuck there like super glue. I tried to pull it away, but it wouldn't move. My hands were grafted to the sword grip.
"Okay, then," the eagle squawked. "We can play it that way."
He took off through the food court at 60 miles an hour, dragging me along behind him. Chapter 30. An apple a day will get you killed. Add to my list of least favorite activities. Eagle surfing. The stupid bird shouldn't have been able to take off with a more or less full-grown Magnus in tow. Yet he did. Behind me, Blitz and Sam yelled helpful stuff like, "Hey, stop!" as the eagle dragged me through tables, chairs, and potted plants, then blasted through the double glass doors and soared over Charles Street. A guy having lunch in the 10th floor condo across the street spewed Cheetos when I shot past. I left a nice footprint on his window. "Let me go!" I yelled at the eagle. The bird cackled as he pulled me along a rooftop.
You sure about that? Heads up!
I twisted, barely avoiding a face-first encounter with an industrial AC unit. I plowed through a brick chimney, using my chest as a battering ram. Then the eagle plummeted down the other side of the building.
So, the eagle said, you ready to negotiate that favor?
With a mutant pigeon who steals falafel? I yelled. No thanks!
Suit yourself.
The eagle veered, slamming me into a fire escape. I felt my ribs crack, like vials of acid breaking inside my chest. My empty stomach tried unsuccessfully to hurl. We climbed above one of the churches on Boylston and circled the steeple. I had an addled thought about Paul Revere and the whole one if by land, two if by sea thing. And if you see a dude being dragged by a giant eagle, I don't even know how many lights that is. I tried to heal my ribs through willpower, but I couldn't concentrate. The pain was too intense. I kept running into walls and kicking out windows.
All I want, the eagle said, is a favor for a favor. I'll tell you how to get the sword, but you have to get me something while you're at it. Nothing much. Just an apple. One apple.
What's the catch?
The catch is that if you don't agree... Oh, look! Pigeon spikes!
Ahead of us, the edge of a hotel roof bristled with steel like a miniature line of World War I barbed wire. The spikes were there to discourage roosting birds, but they'd also do a great job shredding my soft underbelly. Fear got the best of me. I don't like pointy objects. My gut was still sensitive from my recent death by molten asphalt.
Fine, I yelled. No spikes!
Say, by my troth, I agree to your terms.
I don't even know what that means.
Say it!
By my troth, I agree to your terms. Yes, apples. No, spikes. The eagle climbed, narrowly clearing the roof. The tips of my shoes twanged against the barbs. We circled Copley Square and landed on the roof of the Boston Public Library. The sword came free of the eagle's back. My hands unglued themselves, which was great, except that I now had nothing to hold on to. The red curved clay tiles were almost impossible to stand on. The roof slanted precariously. 80 feet below me stretched a wide expanse of pavement-flavored death. I crouched to avoid falling. Carefully, I sheathed my sword, which melted back into a length of chain.
Ow!
I said. My ribs ached. My arms had been pulled half out of their sockets. My chest felt like it had been permanently tattooed with a brick wall design. To my left, the eagle perched on a lightning rod spire, lording over the decorative bronze griffins around the base. I'd never thought of eagles as having expressions, but this one definitely looked smug.
I'm glad you saw reason, he said. Though, honestly, I enjoyed our little flight through the city. It's good to speak with you alone.
I'm blushing, I grumbled. Oh, no, wait. That's the blood all over my face.
Here's the information you need, the eagle continued. When your sword fell in the river, the current carried it downstream. It was claimed by the goddess Ran. Lots of valuable things end up in her net.
Ran? The eagle clicked his beak.
Sea goddess. Has a net. Try to keep up.
Where do I find her? And please don't say the sea.
She could be anywhere, so you'll have to get her attention. The way to do that? I know this guy, Harold. He's got a boat at the fish pier. Does deep sea excursions. Tell him Big Boy sent you.
Big Boy,
one of my many names. Harald will know what you mean. Convince him to take you fishing in Massachusetts Bay. If you cause enough of a ruckus out there, you'll attract Rand's attention. Then you can negotiate. Ask her for the sword and one of Eden's apples.
Eden.
Are you just going to repeat every name I give you? It's I-D-U-N. She distributes the apples of immortality that keep the gods young and spry. Ran is sure to have one lying around, because, seriously, once you see her, you'll be able to tell she's not good about remembering to eat her apples. When you have the apple, bring it back here. Give it to me, and I'll release you from your vow.
Two questions. Are you insane?
No.
Second question. How is fishing in the bay going to create a ruckus that attracts a sea goddess?
That depends on what you fish for. Tell Harald you need the special bait. He'll understand. If he protests, tell him Big Boy insists.
I have no idea what that means, I confessed. Assuming I meet Ran, how am I supposed to bargain with her?
That's three questions. Also, that's your problem.
Last question.
This is four now.
What's to keep me from getting the sword and not bringing you an apple?
Well, you swore by your troth, said the eagle. Your troth is your word, your faith, your honor, your soul. It's a binding oath, especially for an Inherye. Unless you want to spontaneously combust and find yourself trapped forever in the icy darkness of Helheim.
I chewed my lip. I guess I'll keep my promise.
Excellent!
The eagle flapped his wings.
Here come your friends, which is my cue to leave. I'll see you when you have my fresh produce.
The eagle soared away and disappeared behind the glass walls of the Hancock Tower, leaving me to find my own way off the roof. Down in Copley Square, Blitzen, Hearthstone, and Sam were just running onto the frozen lawn. Sam saw me first. She stopped in her tracks and pointed. I waved. I couldn't see her expression, but she spread her arms like, "What the heck are you doing up there?" With some difficulty, I got to my feet. Thanks to my Valhalla Care health plan, my injuries were already starting to mend, but I still felt sore and stiff. I picked my way to the edge of the roof and peered over. Magnus 1.0 never would have considered it, but now I plotted a series of 10-foot jumps to that window ledge, that flagpole, the top of that light fixture, then the front steps. And I thought, yeah, no problem. In a matter of seconds, I'd safely reached the ground. My friends met me at the sidewalk.
What was that about? Blitzen demanded. Was he a giant?
Dunno, I said. His name is Big Boy, and he likes apples. I told them the story. Hearthstone smacked his forehead. He signed, "You swore by your troth?" Well, it was either that or get shredded by pigeon spikes, so yeah. Sam stared at the sky, maybe hoping to see an eagle she could hit with her axe. This will end badly. Deals with giants always do.
At least Magnus found out where the sword is, Blitzen said. Besides, Rand's a goddess. She'll be on our side, right?
Sam snorted. I guess you haven't heard the stories about her that I have. But at this point, We don't have much choice. Let's find Harald.
Chapter 31. Go smelly, or go home. I'd never been scared of boats until I saw Harald's. Painted on the prow was Harald's Deep Sea Excursions and Death Wishes, which seemed like a lot of verbiage for a 20-foot-long dinghy. The deck was a mess of ropes, buckets, and tackle boxes. Nets and buoys festooned the sides like Christmas decorations. The hull had once been green, but had faded to the color of well-chewed spearmint gum. Nearby on the dock sat Harald himself, in splattered yellow coveralls and a t-shirt so grungy my donation box wiggle shirt would have been an upgrade. He was a sumo-sized guy, with arms as thick as the rotating meat spits back at Fodlin's Falafel. Yes, I was still thinking about food. The weirdest thing about him was his hair. His shaggy locks, his beard, even his fuzzy forearms glistened whitish blue, as if he'd been caught outside overnight and glazed with frost. As we approached, he looked up from the rope he was coiling.
"Well now, a dwarf, an elf, and two humans walk under my pier. Sounds like the beginning of a joke."
"I hope not," I said. "We want to rent your boat for a fishing expedition. We'll need the special bait." Harald snorted.
"You four on one of my expeditions? I don't think so."
"Big Boy sent us." Harald furrowed his brow, causing light snow to fall across his cheeks.
"Big Boy, eh? What does he want with the likes of you?"
Sam stepped forward.
"None of your concern."
From her coat pocket, she pulled a large coin and tossed it to Harald.
"One red gold now. 5 more when we finish. Will you rent us the boat or not?"
I leaned toward her.
"What is red gold?" "The currency of Asgard and Valhalla," she said. "Widely accepted in the other realms."
Harald sniffed the coin. Its gold surface glowed so warmly, it seemed to be on fire.
"You have giantess blood, girl? I can see it in your eyes."
"That's also none of your concern."
"Humph. The payment is sufficient, but my boat is small. 2 passengers maximum. I'll take you and the human boy, but the dwarf and the elf, forget it."
Blitzen cracked his knuckles inside his leather gloves.
"Look here, Frosty. Her! Never call a frost giant Frosty. We hate that. Besides, you look half petrified already, dwarf. I don't need another anchor. As for elves, they are creatures of air and light. They're useless aboard a ship. 2 passengers only. That's the deal. Take it or leave it."
I glanced at my friends.
"Guys, sidebar, please."
I led them down the dock, out of earshot from Harald.
"That dude is a frost giant?"
Hearthstone signed, "Icy hair. Ugly. Big. Yes."
"But, I mean, he's large, but he's not giant."
Sam's expression made me suspect she was not the most patient geometry tutor.
"Magnus, giants aren't necessarily enormous. Some are. Some can grow to enormous size if they feel like it. But they're even more varied than humans. Many look like regular people. Some can change shape into eagles or pigeons or almost anything."
"But what's a frost giant doing on the docks in Boston? Can we trust him?"
"First answer," Blitzen said, "frost giants are all over the place, especially in the north of Midgard. As for trusting him, absolutely not. He might take you 2 straight to Jotunheim and throw you in a dungeon, or he might use you for bait. You have to insist that Harth and I go with you."
Hearth tapped Blitz's shoulder. Giant is right, he signed. I told you, too much daylight. You are turning to stone, too stubborn to admit.
Nah, I'm fine.
Hearth looked around the dock. He spotted a metal pail, picked it up, and slammed it over Blitz's head. Blitz didn't react, but the pail crumpled into the shape of his skull.
Okay, Blitz admitted. Maybe I'm petrifying a little, but...
Get out of the light for a while, I told him. We'll be fine. Hearth, can you find him a nice underground lair or something? Hearth nodded. We will try to find out more about Fenris and his chains. Meet you tonight. Back at library? Sounds good, I said. Sam, let's go fishing. We returned to Harald, who was fashioning his rope into a lovely noose.
Okay, I told him. Two passengers. We need to fish as far out in Massachusetts Bay as possible, and we need the special bait.
Harald gave me a twisted grin. His teeth might have been cut from the same fuzzy brown cord he was coiling.
By all means, little human.
He pointed to a sliding door on the side of the warehouse.
Pick your own bait, if you can carry it.
When Sam and I opened the door, I almost passed out from the stench. Sam gagged.
Odin's eye! I've smelled less fragrant battlefields.
Inside the storage room, hanging from meat hooks, was an impressive collection of rotting carcasses. The smallest was a 5-foot-long shrimp. The largest was a severed bull's head the size of a fiat. I covered my nose with my jacket sleeve. That didn't help. I felt like somebody had filled a grenade with rotten egg, rusty metal, and raw onion, then tossed it into my sinus cavity.
It hurts to breathe, I said.
Which of these tasty morsels do you think is the special bait? Sam pointed at the bull's head.
Go big or go home?
She said to the homeless kid. I forced myself to study the bull's head, its curved black horns, its lolling pink tongue like a hairy air mattress, its white, steaming fur, and the glistening slime craters of its nostrils. How is it possible that a bull grew that large?
It's probably from Jotunheim, Sam said. Their cattle get pretty big.
You don't say. Any idea what we're supposed to be fishing for?
There are lots of sea monsters in the deep, as long as it's not...
A shadow crossed her face.
Never mind. Probably just a sea monster.
Just a sea monster? I said.
That's a relief.
I was tempted to take the jumbo shrimp and get out of there, but I had a feeling we'd need bigger bait if we were going to cause a ruckus that would attract a sea goddess.
The bull's head it is, I decided.
Sam hefted her axe.
I'm not sure it'll even fit on Harald's boat, but...
She threw her axe at the meat hook chain, which broke with a snap. The bull's head crashed to the floor like a large, disgusting piñata. The axe flew back to Sam's hand. Together, we gripped the meat hook and dragged the bull's head out of the storage locker. Even with help, I shouldn't have been able to move it, but my inherent strength was up to the task. Die painfully. Go to Valhalla. Gain the ability to drag rancid, colossal severed heads across a dock. Hooray! When we got to the boat, I yanked the chain with all my strength. The bull's head toppled off the pier and smashed onto the deck. The SS Harald almost capsized, but somehow it stayed afloat. The bull's head took up the back half of the ship. Its tongue hung over the stern. Its left eye rolled up in its head so it looked seasick. Harald rose from his bait bucket. If he was at all surprised or annoyed that I'd dropped a 500-pound cowhead on his boat, he didn't show it.
An ambitious choice of bait.
Harald gazed across the harbor.
The sky was darkening. Light sleet needled the surface of the water.
Let's get going, then. Lovely afternoon to fish.
Chapter 32. My years of playing Bassmasters 2000 really pay off. It was a terrible afternoon to fish. The sea heaved, and so did I, right over the side several times. The cold didn't bother me, but the sleet stung my face. The rocking of the deck made my legs feel like slinkies. Harald the Frost Giant stood at the wheel, singing in a guttural language I assumed was Jotunese. Sam didn't seem to mind the rough seas. She leaned against the bow rail and stared into the gray, her scarf rippling around her neck like gills. "What's with the scarf, anyway?" I asked. "Sometimes you cover your head, sometimes you don't." She laid her fingers protectively over the green silk. "It's a hijab. I wear it when I want to, or when I think I need to. Like when I take my grandmother to mosque on Friday, or..."
"Or when you see Amir?"
she muttered under her breath. "I almost thought you were going to let that go."
"The pigeon said Amir is your intended. Like, engaged? What are you, like 16?
"Magnus..."
"I'm just saying, if this is one of those forced arranged marriages, that's messed up. You're a Valkyrie. You should be able to..."
"Magnus, shut it. Please."
The boat hit a swell, spraying us with saltwater buckshot. Samira gripped the rail.
"My grandparents are old-fashioned. They were raised in Baghdad, but fled to the U.S. when Saddam Hussein was in power."
"And?"
"They've known the Fadlans since forever. They're good people. Distant kin. Successful. Kind."
"I know. Abdel is awesome. Amir seems cool.
But a forced marriage if you don't love the guy..."
"Ah, you don't get it. I've been in love with Amir since I was 12.
The boat groaned as it dipped between the waves. Harald kept singing his Jotunese version of 99 bottles of beer.
"Oh," I said.
"Not that it's any of your business," Samira said.
"Yeah, no."
"But sometimes, when a family tries to find a good match, they actually care what the girl thinks."
"Okay."
"I didn't realize until I was older. After my mom died, my grandparents took me in, but, well, my mom wasn't married when she had me. That's still a big deal for my grandparents' generation."
"Yeah." I decided not to add, "plus the fact that your dad was Loki, the father of evil."
Sam seemed to read my thoughts.
"She was a doctor, my mom. She found Loki in the emergency room. He was... I don't know. He'd used up too much of his power trying to appear in Midgard in physical form. He got trapped somehow, divided between worlds. His manifestation in Boston was in agony, weak and helpless."
"She cured him?"
Sam brushed a droplet of seawater from her wrist.
"In a way, she was kind to him. She stayed by his side. Loki can be very charming when he wants to be."
"I know," I blinked. "I mean, from the stories. You've met him in person?"
She shot me a dark look.
"I don't approve of my father. He may be charismatic, but he's also a liar, a thief, a murderer. He's visited me several times. I refused to talk to him, which drives him nuts. He likes to be noticed. He's not exactly low-key."
"I get it," I said.
"Loki. Low-key."
She rolled her eyes.
"Anyway, my mom mostly raised me by herself. She was headstrong, unconventional. When she died... well, in the local community, I was damaged goods, a bastard child. My grandparents were lucky, very lucky, to get the Fadlan's blessing for me to marry Amir. I won't really bring anything to the marriage. I'm not rich, or respectable, or... Come on, I said.
You're smart, you're tough, you're an honest-to-frig Valkyrie, and I can't believe I'm finding reasons to support your arranged marriage.
Her dark hair whipped around her, collecting flecks of ice. The Valkyrie thing is a problem, she said. My family, well, we're a little different. We have a long, long history with the Norse gods.
How?
She waved away the question like, too much to explain. Still, she said, if anyone found out about my other life, I don't think Mr. Fodlan would be okay with his eldest son marrying a girl who moonlights as a soul collector for pagan gods.
Ah, when you put it that way.
I cover for my absences as best I can.
Math tutoring.
And some simple Valkyrie glamours. But a good Muslim girl is not supposed to hang out on her own with strange guys.
Strange guys. Thanks.
I had a sudden image of Sam sitting in English class when her phone started to buzz. The screen flashed, Odin calling. She dashed to the restroom, changed into her super Valkyrie costume, and flew out the nearest window. When you got kicked out of Valhalla, I'm sorry about that, but didn't you think, hey, maybe this is a good thing? I can have a normal life now? No, that's the problem. I want both. I want to marry Amir when the time comes. But also, all my life, I've wanted to fly.
Flying like airplanes, or flying like zooming around on a magic horse?
Both. When I was 6, I started drawing pictures of airplanes. I wanted to be a pilot. How many Arab-American female pilots do you know?
You would be the first, I admitted.
I like that idea. Ask me any question about airplanes. I can answer it. So when you became a Valkyrie, it was a total rush, a dream come true, being able to take off at a moment's notice. Besides, I felt like I was doing some good. I could find honorable, brave people who died protecting others, and I could bring them to Valhalla. You don't know how much I miss that. I could hear the pain in her voice. Honorable, brave people. She was including me in that group. After all the trouble she'd gotten into for my sake, I wanted to tell her that it would be all right. We would figure out a way so she could have both her lives. But I couldn't even promise we'd live through this boat trip. From the wheelhouse, Harald bellowed,
Mortals, you should bait your hooks. We're getting close to good fishing.
Sam shook her head.
No. Go farther out.
Harald scowled.
Not safe. Any farther.
You want your gold or not?
Harald muttered something that was probably inappropriate in Jotunese. He gunned the motor. I looked at Sam. How do you know we need to go farther? I can sense it, she said. One of the advantages of my father's blood, I guess. I can usually tell where the biggest monsters are lurking.
Joy and happiness.
I peered into the gloom. I thought about Ginnungagap, the primordial mist between ice and fire. We seemed to be sailing right into it. Any moment, the sea might dissolve and we'd fall into oblivion. I hoped I was wrong. Sam's grandparents would probably be ticked off if she didn't get home in time for dinner. The boat shuddered. The sea darkened.
There, Sam said. Did you feel it? We've passed from Midgard into Jotunheim waters.
I pointed off the port bow. A few hundred yards away, a granite spire jutted out of the fog.
But that's Graves Light. We're not too far from the harbor.
Sam grabbed one of the giant's fishing poles, which looked more appropriate for heavyweight pole vaulting. The worlds overlap, Magnus, especially near Boston. Go get the bait.
Harald slowed the engines when he saw me coming aft.
Too dangerous to fish here, he warned. Besides, I doubt you'll be able to cast that bait.
Shut up, Harald. I grabbed the chain and dragged the bull's head forward, almost knocking the captain overboard with one of its horns. When I got back to Sam, we examined the meat hook, which was embedded pretty well in the bull's skull. That should work for a fishing hook, Sam decided. Let's get this chain tied on. We spent a few minutes attaching the chain to the fishing line, a thin, braided steel cable that made the reel weigh about 300 pounds. Together, Sam and I rolled the bull's head off the front of the boat. It sank slowly into the icy froth, the bull's dead eye staring at me as it submerged like,
"Not cool, man."
Harald lumbered over, carrying a large chair. He sunk its 4 feet into anchor holes on the deck. Then he lashed the seat in place with steel cables.
"If I were you, human," he said, "I'd buckle up."
With its leather harnesses, the seat looked a little too much like an electric chair to me, but Sam held the fishing pole while I strapped myself in. "So why am I in the chair?" I asked. "Your promise," she reminded me. "You swore by your troth."
"Troth sucks."
From the giant's supply kit, I pulled some leather gloves that were only 4 sizes too big and put them on. Sam handed me the pole and then found gloves for herself. I had a disjointed memory from when I was 10 years old, watching Jaws with my mom because she insisted. She warned me it was super scary, but the whole time I was either bored at the slow pace or laughing at the schlocky-looking rubber shark. "Please let me catch a rubber shark," I muttered now. Harald cut the engines. Suddenly it was freakishly quiet. The wind died. The sleet against the deck sounded like sand hitting glass. The waves calmed as if the sea was holding its breath. Sam stood at the rail, feeding out cable as the bull's head sank into the depths. Finally, the line went slack.
"Did we hit bottom?" I asked.
Sam bit her lip. "I don't know. I think..." The line sprang taut with a sound like a hammer on a saw blade. Sam let go to avoid being catapulted into space. The pole was nearly ripped out of my hands, taking my fingers with it, but somehow I held on. The chair groaned. The leather straps dug into my collarbones. The entire boat leaned forward into the waves with timbers creaking and rivets popping.
"Ymir's blood!" Harald yelled. "We're breaking apart!"
"Give it more line!" Sam grabbed a bucket. She poured water on the cable, which steamed as it raced off the prow. I gritted my teeth. My arm muscles felt like warm bread dough. Just when I was sure I couldn't hold on any longer, the pulling stopped. The line hummed with tension, laser-dotting on the gray water about 100 yards starboard.
"What's going on?" I asked. "Is it resting?"
Harald cursed.
"I don't like this. Sea monsters don't act this way. Even the biggest catches..."
"Reel it in," Sam said. "Now!" I turned the handle. It was like arm wrestling the Terminator. The rod bent. The cable creaked. Sam pulled the line, keeping it clear of the rail, but even with her help, I could barely make any progress. My shoulders went numb. My lower back spasmed. Despite the cold, I was soaked with sweat and shivering with exhaustion. I felt like I was reeling in a sunken battleship. From time to time, Sam yelled encouraging things like, "No, you idiot! Pull!" Finally, in front of the boat, the sea darkened in a 50-foot diameter oval. The waves sloshed and boiled. Up in the wheelhouse, Harald must have had a better view of whatever was coming to the surface. He screamed in a very ungiantish voice,
"Cut the line!"
"No," Sam said, "it's too late for that."
Harald snatched up a knife. He threw it at the cable, but Sam deflected the blade with her axe.
"Back off, giant!" she yelled.
"But you can't bring that thing up," Harald wailed. "It's the..."
"Yes, I know."
The rod began slipping from my hands.
"Help!"
Sam lunged and grabbed the fishing pole. She wedged herself next to me in the chair to assist, but I was too tired and terrified to feel embarrassed.
"We may all die," she muttered, "but this will definitely get Rand's attention."
"Why?" I asked. "What is that thing?" Our catch broke the surface and opened its eyes.
"Meet my older brother," Sam said. "The world serpent."
Chapter 33. Sam's brother wakes up kinda cranky. When I say the serpent opened his eyes, I mean he switched on green spotlights the size of trampolines. His irises glowed so intensely, I was pretty sure everything I saw for the rest of my life would be tinted the color of lime jello. The good news, the rest of my life didn't look like it was going to be very long. The monster's ridged forehead and tapered snout made him look more like an eel than a snake. His hide glistened in a camouflage patchwork of green, brown, and yellow. Here I am calmly describing him. At the time, the only thought in my mind was,
"Yikes! Huge snake!"
He opened his mouth and hissed. The stench of rancid bull's head and poison so strong my clothes smoked. He may not have used mouthwash, but obviously the world serpent cared about flossing. His teeth gleamed in rows of perfect white triangles. His pink maw was big enough to swallow Harald's boat and a dozen of Harald's closest friends' boats. My meat hook was embedded in the back of his mouth, right where the hangy-down uvula thing would be in a human mouth. The serpent didn't seem too happy about that. He shook back and forth, raking the steel line across his teeth. My fishing pole whipped sideways. The boat seesawed port to starboard, planks cracking and popping, but somehow we stayed afloat. My line didn't break.
"Sam," I said in a small voice, "why hasn't he killed us yet?"
She pressed so close to me I could feel her shivering.
"I think he's studying us, maybe even trying to talk to us."
"What is he saying?" Sam gulped.
"My guess? How dare you?"
The serpent hissed, spitting globs of poison that sizzled against the deck. Behind us, Harald whimpered.
"Drop the pole, you fools! You'll get us all killed!"
I tried to meet the serpent's gaze.
"Hey, Mr. Jormungand, can I call you Mr. J? Look, sorry to bother you, nothing personal. We're just using you to get somebody's attention."
Mr. J didn't like that. His head surged out of the water, towering above us, then crashed down again off the bow, triggering a 40-foot-tall ring of waves. Sam and I were definitely sitting in the splash zone. I ate salt water for lunch. My lungs discovered they could not, in fact, breathe the stuff. My eyes got a thorough power washing. But incredibly, the boat didn't capsize. When the rocking and sloshing subsided, I found myself still alive, still holding the fishing pole, with my line still attached to the world serpent's mouth. The monster stared at me like,
"Why are you not dead?"
Out of the corner of my eye, I saw the tsunami crash against the graves, washing all the way up to the base of the lighthouse. I wondered if I'd just flooded Boston. I remembered why Jormungand was called the World Serpent. Supposedly his body was so long it wrapped around the earth, stretching across the seafloor like a monstrous telecommunication cable. Most of the time, he kept his tail in his mouth. Hey, I used a pacifier until I was almost two, so I can't judge. But apparently, he'd decided our bull's head bait was worth the switch. The point being,
If the world serpent was shaking, the whole world might be shaking with him.
So, I said to nobody in particular, what now?
Magnus, Sam said in a strangled tone, try not to panic, but look off the starboard side. I couldn't imagine what would be more panic-inducing than Mr. J until I saw the woman in the whirlpool. Compared to the serpent, she was tiny, only about 10 feet tall. From the waist up, she wore a blouse of silver chainmail encrusted with barnacles. She might have once been beautiful, but her pearlescent skin was withered, her seaweed-green eyes were milky with cataracts, and her rippling blonde hair was shot through with gray like blight in a wheat field. From the waist down, things got weird. Spinning around her like a dancer's skirt, a waterspout swirled within a silver fishing net 100 yards in diameter. Trapped in its weave was a kaleidoscope of ice flow, dead fish, plastic garbage bags, car tires, grocery carts, and other assorted flotsam. As the woman floated toward us, the edge of her net thwapped against our hull and scraped against the world serpent's neck. She spoke in a deep baritone.
Who dares interrupt my scavenging?
Harald the Frost Giant screamed. He was a champion screamer. He scrambled to the bow and threw a bunch of gold coins over the side. Then he turned to Sam.
Quick, girl! Your payment to me! Give it to Ran!
Sam frowned, but she tossed another 5 coins overboard. Instead of sinking, the red gold swirled into Ran's net and joined the floating merry-go-round of debris.
Oh, great Ran! Harald wailed. Please don't kill me! Here, take my anchor. Take these humans. You can even have my lunchbox. Silence!
The goddess shooed away the frost giant, who did his best to cower, grovel, and retreat all at the same time.
I'll just be below decks, he sobbed, praying.
Ran regarded me as if deciding whether I was large enough to fillet.
Release Jormungand, mortal. The last thing I need today is a world flooding event.
The world serpent hissed in agreement. Ran turned on him.
And you shut up, you overgrown moray. All your writhing is stirring up the silt. I can't see a thing down there. How many times have I told you not to bite at any old rancid bull's head? Rancid bull's heads are not native to these waters.
The world serpent snarled petulantly, tugging at the steel cable in his mouth.
Oh, great Ran, I said. I am Magnus Chase. This is Sam Alabis. We've come to bargain with you. Also, just wondering, why can't you cut the fishing line yourself?
Ran let loose a torrent of Norse curses that literally steamed in the air. Now that she was closer, I could see stranger things swirling in her net. Ghostly, bearded faces, gasping and terrified as they tried to reach the surface, hands clawing at the ropes.
Worthless in hair ye, said the goddess. You know full well what you have done.
I do? I asked.
You are Veneer Spawn, a child of Njord?
Ran sniffed the air.
No, your scent is fainter, perhaps a grandchild.
Sam's eyes widened.
Right! Magnus, you're the son of Frey, son of Njord, god of ships, sailors, and fishermen. That's why our boat didn't capsize. That's why you were able to catch the serpent.
She looked at Ran.
Which, of course, we already knew.
Ran snarled.
Once brought to the surface, the world serpent is not simply bound by your fishing line. He is connected to you by fate. You must now decide, and quickly, whether to cut him loose and return him to his slumber.